It's report day. In fact, it's one of the biggest report days. We are less than an hour from USDA's first survey-based corn and soybean crop estimates of the year. It's one of the reports that always leaves somebody in the market surprised and mad. The question this year, how long will the trade focus on the fresh supply-side estimates?
Live from Report Day Rev Up, it's via Farm Journal broadcast, it's AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Senator Chuck Grassley. Yeah. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum with panelists Gary Niemeyer and Kevin Papp. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, Gary Niemeyer, former president of the NCGA, Illinois farmer. Yep. Kevin Papp, current president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau, Minnesota farmer, is going to be on the Farmer Forum for the second half of the show today. Should be really good. We've got a lot of issues, a lot of topics that we want to cover. And speaking of a lot of issues and topics,
normally
when I put together my notes for a conversation with Senator Grassley, I try to keep it relatively short because I know that the senator is going to have some topics that he is also going to want to. I couldn't do it today. It is a long.
Really?
It is a long list of topics. We'll get through as many of them as we possibly can. But we are going to start with some of those gap waivers, the latest that he has heard. Mm-hmm. We are going to talk about the investigation into the cattle, cash cattle market. What about the potential for some hearings on livestock mandatory price reporting? We've got a lot of issues that we need to cover. And we've got these reports coming up. They're at 11 o'clock Central Time this morning. And the question is, how long are we going to focus on these fresh supply-side estimates? Because things have changed. These estimates are as of August 1. And when you think about some of the areas that have received rains on a bean crop that needed those rains in August, that is already going to draw into question some of the reliability of the bean crop estimate, right?
Right.
And then, of course, that windstorm that blew through the middle of Iowa on Monday. Dude.
I've got some comments from Mike Nagy, Iowa Secretary of Ag, up here. Yeah.
Let's get right to him, man. Let's hear him. What do you got?
Well, Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagy said as much as 40% of Iowa's farmland was impacted by the derecho that slipped through the state earlier this week. The secretary placed the estimated acreage at 10 million crop acres experiencing some form of damage. While some have said that number is too high, Nagy did point out he believes at least some of the crops involved will recover. The secretary also noted millions of bushels of storage capacity were wiped out in the state. Too soon to tell on the numbers, Chip.
Yeah, you know, and that 10 million acre number is raising a lot of eyebrows. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady and I had a conversation about it yesterday, and he was like, "That's a big number, 10 million acres. It's 40% of the cropland in Iowa." Mm-hmm. But Mike Nagy and the governor couched that by saying some form of damage.
Right.
And I don't know if we can rule out that. And some of the damage is going to be exceptionally light, and the impact when you roll through with the yield monitor and the combine, you're not going to notice it on the yield monitor, and it's not going to slow you down at all. But there was still some form of damage. But where the damage is significant, Davis, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this. It's terrible.
Well, let's look ahead to USDA's reports, as you said, out at 11 Central Time today. Analysts surveyed by Reuters expect USDA to raise its corn and soybean yield projections, with an average production estimate coming in at 15.174 billion bushels for corn and 4.254 billion bushels for soybeans. Cotton production is expected to fall to 17.19 million metric tons, but the all wheat production figure is expected to rise on a stronger spring wheat crop. The reports will include the first survey-based look at this year's crops, but will not feature field-based yield assessments for the first time, Chip.
Well, no, this is the second time. They didn't do it last year either. Okay. the objective yield plots were not part of the estimate a year ago. They're not part of the estimate this year. I think we're the understanding of the process is getting better all the time. What they're going to be working from are the farmer surveys and the satellite data, and they continue to put more emphasis on the satellite pictures.
Yep. Well, gold encountered its largest fall off in 7 years yesterday on President Trump's comments regarding possible tax cuts, falling COVID hospitalizations, and solid Chinese economic data. Gold plunged 4.6% on Tuesday to settle at $1,946.30 per ounce for its steepest one-day dollar decline since April 15, 2013. Other precious metals also fell, with silver declining 11% yesterday, surrendering all of the gains won since the beginning of August. Does that mean anything to us, Chip?
It's something that we definitely need to watch, but we are seeing a bit of a bounce in precious metals this morning. It's nowhere close to getting back all of the losses that were posted yesterday, but there is a bit of a bounce. So there could just be some profit taking involved in these markets right now.
Okay, fair enough. Well, and finally, Beijing diplomats say they are anxious to talk with U.S. negotiators with relationship maintenance in focus. In the coming days, negotiators are planning to visit about the implementation and progress of the Phase One trade deal, but Chinese negotiators are expected to bring up the topic of the Trump administration's ban on TikTok and WeChat on the grounds of national security. While a final meeting date has not yet been set, sources say a video chat could take place as soon as this week. Chip.
Yeah, very good. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of The Scoop. She joins us right now. How you doing, Margie?
Hey, Chip. Doing good this morning.
Good, good, good. Boy, with all the crop damage, the use of drones is going to be accelerated again this year.
Yeah, drones, I kind of categorize drone applications in agriculture into two buckets, one being actual applications, so like our friends from Rantizo that you've had on that are out there spraying and swarming with drones, but then also for imagery and scouting. And I actually had a recent conversation that's going to be featured at Farm Journal Field Days with both Rantizo as well as a crop consultant, Eric Eller, out of Forefront Solutions in Indiana. And Eric shared there are three takeaways that he's found with drones this year. And number one, the sins of the planter will haunt us all season. And drones really help pinpoint those replant needs early in the season. Okay. Also, the technology allows them to really focus scouting efforts. So he says he's been able to pick up on, an example would be a potassium deficiency in a field that he does not think he would have been able to find on the typical walk and wander technique, right? And building on that, number three, the scale and timeliness of these drones allow and the images they're providing and allowing those scouting efforts to be really focused and to be able to see 100% of a field and evaluate where you should go, how large a problem is in a very quick manner.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about, okay, the drones are cool, but how do you really make them pay? What you're talking about in the Farm Journal Field Day is making those drones pay.
Exactly. And that drones are tools. They're toys, but they're also tools, right? And those
Absolutely.
Leaders in the drone industry are sharing more.
Excellent, Margie. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We have got Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa standing by, ready to go right here on AgriTalk. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Pioneer. For the best agronomic advice for your farm, count on your local Pioneer team for year-round advice. Pioneer, an American seed brand since 1926. She called the cat.
cheating. Okay, we're not going to waste any time this morning, Davis. Going to jump right to it. We have Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa on the line with us. Senator Grassley, welcome back to AgriTalk. Thank you so much for making time.
Chip, glad to be with you. And for those people that are along a line between Interstate 80 and Highway 20 in Iowa were badly hit. There's a lot of flat corn and a lot of damage done. Grain elevators down. I don't know whether you've been following that or not, but I thought I'd give you a report. And I hope that people are able to do it, but a lot of damage, flat corn, you know.
Yeah. Governor Reynolds declaring some emergency declarations for some of those counties out there, Senator. That should clear the way for some federal aid for the cleanup?
At this point, I'm not sure she's asked the president yet, and there's a certain threshold you got to go through. So she declared them disaster areas that trigger in some state programs and state funding. But I'm not aware that she's asked the president yet, but the president will move very quickly if she makes such a request.
Gotcha. Gotcha. You stayed just on the north edge of it with your farm, didn't you?
Yeah. And I don't know how close it came, but at least 20 miles away, I've got a staff person that's on vacation at her family's farm, and they had a tremendous amount of damage, flattened corn, but also trees down. At a neighbor, a big silo went over. Then I saw pictures of the Luther a grain elevator down, 400,000 people in Iowa without electricity, people with RECs only sleeping 3 hours because they're out working around the clock to get REC customers in the Tama Grundy area, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. You can probably give me 100 examples just like I ought to be able to give you 100 examples, but you kind of forget. You remember a few of them.
Yeah, I got you. Let's go to some national issues here, and I want to start with the gap waiver requests that are sitting at EPA. What is Administrator Wheeler going to do with those waiver requests, Senator Grassley?
He's got 90 days to make a decision. The Department of Energy has done the technical work that they have to do, whether or not they would qualify. And even if they qualify, EPA doesn't have to give them out. So I think the best thing I can do is go back to a conversation we had with Wheeler maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago when the first words out of Ernst's mouth were, why are you even entertaining these gap waivers? Because to her and me, you're asking 2020 for waivers for the years 2011 through 2015, it just doesn't make sense. If you were hurt economically, you ought to be asking those requests at that time.
Right.
He said he had to receive them. I've heard some opinions from people that say in the past they haven't they don't necessarily have to receive them. But I suppose whatever his lawyer said is what he's going to do. Now. At that particular time, Wheeler gave us an answer something like this. Even if they qualified, I'm not sure how I could help them because we don't have REN waivers, REN certificates for those years. So how do you help them? And so I'm going to count that as his being very negative towards it. Or very questioning of it, and then we got into a discussion of the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruling that was very favorable to RFS and very unfavorable to EPA, having already granted some waivers illegally, as curbing his discretion.
Yeah. Right. Senator Grassley, one of the frustrating things I think on this for a lot of people is that it feels like this decision is going to get pushed back until after the November elections.
Well, he's got 90 days, so 90 days would take it past the November election, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, doesn't that hurt I hate to say this, but doesn't that hurt Senator Ernst's chances in Iowa?
Well, if people knew how hard she was working to keep EPA within the law and within the 15 billion gallons, I have no question about it. Her working hard for ethanol, you know, we got another branch of government, and we only the president, only Wheeler makes that decision. We can advocate for it, but whatever he wants to do, I don't see how it could hurt Ernst when I've heard her in every conversation we've had. I've even heard her in the White House with oil interests being at the table with the president, the vice president, and oil senators and ethanol senators speak up against Senator Cruz for his advocacy for small refiner waivers. So considering all how hard she worked, there might be a decision that farmers don't like in Iowa, but I don't see how you could blame Ernst for it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Fact, yeah, could, I'm not questioning her work on this at all.
Well, yeah, when I say you, I don't mean I don't mean Chip.
Yeah, no, I
mean
get
the
it.
Farmers of Iowa. Yeah.
I appreciate that, Senator. The investigation into the cattle market, are you satisfied with the progress that's being made?
I don't know how much progress is being made, except there's more progress being made than I've ever had before in asking for these investigations, because all you get is a smile from the Department of Justice. Now I know the Department of Justice has moved ahead with seeking documents from the four biggest meat packers, so that's progress, but that's the only progress report I can give you. But I'm shocked that they're doing that, but I'm glad that they're doing it. I don't want to misinterpret what I've requested, because I want them to take a real hard look at it. And if there's something wrong, prosecute. They're prosecuting some people in the chicken industry, you know. So they're willing to take some action to benefit agriculture. In regard to the Secretary of Agriculture's Purdue's investigation, we have a preliminary report with 12 recommendations, and those recommendations need to be acted upon by the Congress, and meaning the agriculture committees of the two houses. And that would lead to more transparency, you know.
Right. Absolutely. What about the hearings on the mandatory livestock price reporting? Are there going to be any hearings?
Well, I told Senator Roberts that I wouldn't comment about his being for or against it for 3 weeks, so I'm not going to comment on that. But
fair enough.
I did have a conversation where he said he had not made up his mind to be against the bill that I had been accusing him of.
Okay.
And so that's a positive move as far as I'm concerned.
Very good. Very good. Okay. The next round of stimulus to help in the economic recovery from the COVID shutdowns. It feels like it was advanced by the executive orders by President Trump, but is there any progress being made for the package in Congress?
No. What the president's authority to do by executive action is very limited by the laws we pass and giving him the authority to do it, and that's probably been done over a course of the last 80 years piecemeal. So he's taken action in the three areas where he can, with evictions, and with unemployment, and another one. I think he issued 3 executive orders. He doesn't have the authority to do anything on agriculture, so that's why we hope to get a bill passed that'll have $20 billion in it for the Secretary of Agriculture to do it. Now, the Secretary of Agriculture still has $5 billion left over from the appropriation of the previous CARES Act we passed. And then there was already some other money in CCC, so I think the Secretary of Agriculture still got the capability of helping to some extent, but it would send a clear signal he needs to act if Congress would pass a bill that had $20 billion in it,
right,
in addition
right.
to what he's got already.
Absolutely, absolutely. Senator Grassley, you're always so generous with your time. We appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You bet. Call me again, Chip.
You know we will. You know we will. That is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa with some updates on some very important and timely topics. Okay, when we come back, we're going to get this Farmer Forum started. Kevin from Minnesota, Gary from Illinois, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Pivot Bio Proven, predictable, productive, weatherproof. Get a reliable partner, get the new nitrogen, get Pivot Bio Proven.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, we're half hour away from first survey-based estimates of the year for corn and soybean crops. Are the markets kind of in a holding pattern in front of it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the corn market's under some pressure, and the expectation is that we'll see a record yield there from USDA and up from what the July trend line projection was. So, you know, we'll see where the number all shakes out there when, here in a half an hour or so. But under pressure, but holding above the contract lows that we've posted here recently, at the moment anyway.
Winter wheat prices under a little bit of pressure here this morning, too. Has that got anything to do with report expectations or just wheat being wheat?
I think it's more of the latter, to be honest with you there. You know, just a struggle. The wheat market is still trying to find demand, and to find demand in this marketplace, you probably have to go with a lower price, and so that's what we're seeing. You know, we've had a little bit of an uptick yesterday in prices just on corrective trade, but no follow through today and a little bit of price pressure, like you mentioned.
Gotcha. Some strength in the cattle complex. Looking good.
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed with the cattle market. A little bit disappointed last week, but we kind of set back on top of what was previous resistance, and then it took off yesterday with strong follow-through today, so we got an upside breakout going off the daily charts. That's a positive note there. On the hog side of things, really been pretty quiet most of the morning, but trading to the downside with the October contract facing the most price pressure so far.
Yeah, that October contract is lower on the week again after a big move to the upside on Monday. All right, thanks, Beej. We'll talk to you later. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
And the Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Thank you so much. Like Davis just said, go to agweb.com/ACAM to learn more about it. We appreciate all the support there. Let's get this. Davis, can you believe what we got for a Farmer Forum today? Kevin Papp, president
I'm
of
in disbelief.
Minnesota Farm, yeah. Minnesota Farm Bureau and farmer up in Minnesota. How you doing, Kevin?
Doing real well. It's actually raining here right now.
Oh, man. Those cell phone issues are starting to sneak up on you there, Kevin. Let's go to let's get your left hand in the air and grab hold of a coat hanger or something. We'll see if we can get your signal back. Let's go to Gary Niemeyer over in Illinois. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, just fine, Chip. How you doing?
I'm doing real well. Gary's past president of the National Corn Growers Association, well known. So did you miss all of the storm on Monday, or did you catch a little bit of it someplace?
Well, I'm going to say we were very fortunate. We had winds of probably 20 miles an hour at the most, and we ended up with about 0.7 inch of rain. But prior to that, about 3 weeks ago, we got a tornado that just went through one of my fields, and it missed our house by a quarter of a mile.
So you've got some storm damage that you're dealing with this year too. That's always fun to combine, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You know, first of all, you got the corn's blowing sideways. You have crop insurance issues you got to deal with. If the corn's broken off below the ear, it's one thing. If it's broken off, the stock's broken off above the ear, it's a totally different thing. And then as I was looking at a lot of these pictures of grain bins torn down, what do you do with your grain during harvest?
Yeah, it's going to turn into a logistical nightmare for a lot of these guys. I don't think there's any question about that. Let's try Kevin again. Kevin, did you say that you're getting rain this morning?
Yeah, we're getting rain right now with some storms and everything else. So can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you. You're a little muffled. You're a little muffled, but I think we can get by with it. What? Everything else looking pretty good with that crop up there, Kevin?
Actually, our crop does look good. We're certainly ahead of last year by a lot, ahead of our five-year average. Our crop looks good. I just want to add, Chip, I was actually driving through on a Monday afternoon and got a chance to see a lot of that storm.
Got a chance to see a lot of that storm damage there in Iowa on Monday afternoon driving through it. What was your impression there, Kevin?
Well, my impression is that we kind of went through that the year before. Unfortunately, it's going to be a challenge harvesting, I'm thinking. I'm still going to make a crop, but a lot of that crop is going to be a next year soybean field. It's going to be a struggle. I've learned that firsthand.
Yeah, a lot of that crop will be a next year soybean field. That's when we start talking about some dirty bean fields out there with volunteer corn and some issues that we need to deal with. Gary, your point about one of the reasons that there's been such an increase in on-farm storage here over the past few years, it's not just to provide some flexibility on marketing. It's to provide the opportunity to go, go, go when harvest comes so that you can get this stuff done. We're going to be – this is going to draw things out, Gary.
Well, I think so, very much so. In fact, I even noticed here locally in central Illinois, they've upped the basis is a couple, 3 cents better because they're trying to get a lot of people to get rid of their old corn. So they'll have room for the new crop that comes in. And then we're also, here being in Illinois, we're working on the LaGrange lock, which handles a lot of stuff. That's in my local area, but several other locks. And we're hoping to get the river system back open sometime in October. And I know that the Waterways Council is working on that today.
Right. You know, Gary, with the with what they're doing, working on the maintenance on the Illinois River, yeah, we want them to stick to a schedule, but thank God they're doing it.
It's about time. I started out with Waterways. That was my big issue in 1995, and I hate to tell you, this is one of the failures that's really aggravated me to no end. There's two things out in Washington, D.C. They're A words. One is getting authorization. The other is getting money. Called appropriations, and right. Getting money seems to be harder and heck to do these days for stuff that is a lot of people don't perceive to be essential, but it really is.
Absolutely it is. And you know, Kevin isn't sitting on top of an inland waterway up there in Minnesota, well, unless he's got access to the Mississippi River over there, but it still has an impact on your basis up there, doesn't it, Kevin?
Absolutely. You know, it's so important, and it's not just getting our crops downstream, but we've got to have those inputs upstream. So locks and dams, river transportation, it's critical coming and going.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, did you hear the conversation with Senator Grassley on the gap year waiver requests? I mean, it's a point of frustration, but I don't know what else lawmakers like Grassley and Ernst, and I'm going to throw Axne into it from Iowa. And those are the ones that obviously I'm following most closely. I don't know what they can do more to prevent these waivers from being issued. Do you?
Do we know anybody that's better champions for agriculture, for renewable fuels than those people you mentioned? And we've got to give them that support, but we've got to make sure everyone understands how important renewable fuels are for the Midwest farmers.
Yeah, we need to keep the voice loud on this, don't we, Gary?
Absolutely. He talked also, the senator talked also about livestock. man, mm-hmm. I'll tell you, the cattle are taken in yep. a bad position right now with a $250 loss, and hogs are probably $40 per head loss. And I sure hope he resolves that. That's the first large issue that affects corn growers, because they utilize the most corn. And then we get down to ethanol. And if we're about 500 million gallons short, and we need to get that back up in our RVO, our renewable volume obligation numbers, by 2021. And, you know, this would be a great time, because I understand Vice President Pence may be in Iowa someplace August 13th, for him to step up and resolve some of this issue. You know, the other thing is, in 2022, EPA takes over statutory numbers in the RFS, and if history is any indication, we need to work with autos and environmental community and the oil companies to make all liquid fuels work together.
There you go. There you go. You know, I keep hearing about the electric vehicles and how they're going to have a big impact. So I started looking into some of the manufacturers out there and what their goals really are. Yeah, they want to bring it to the market as fast as they can, you guys, but some of the most optimistic projections are that new car sales in 10 years could be 10% electric. So liquid fuel is going to be around for a long time here, isn't it, Kevin? We got to stay focused.
It's going to be around for a long time, and we need to help with that process by adding more renewable fuel. I mean, that's the perfect place for E15, for higher blends, to help with that. So let's use each other and make that work. We don't need to have electric and everything. We need more biofuels.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt about that. No doubt. Okay. So as we look forward, Gary, to the election coming up here, let's take a little bit of a different approach on this. What could Biden do, along with his VP Harris, what could they do to win the rural vote like President Trump won it in 16?
Well, that's a good question, Chip, and I have more questions than I have answers on this. Number one, you have a West Coast person from California, Kamala Harris, and then Biden is on the East Coast. What do they really know about farming? And I think the biggest thing that we need to do is get our organizations, Kevin Farm Bureau and me, corn growers and soybeans, and all the organizations need to go in and ag educate both of these two, because here's the problem. We really don't know where they're going to be on climate change, ethanol, farm aid, and tax policy. But more than that, how will China perceive the Biden-Harris ticket, and will yep. that perception have an effect on our grain purchases before and after the elections?
Good. Man, you nailed that right there. We're going to do this real quick. Going to bring Doug Rich into the conversation. Doug has just called in. Doug, welcome to AgriTalk. Real quick, what do you got on your mind?
I got to say, just with these laws being broken over these RFS waivers being implemented, let's just send in the U.S. Marshals, arrest these guys in the EPA.
If they're breaking laws, then let's go ahead and
arrest them.
And arrest them, enforce it. You know what, Doug? I don't know. That's a pretty doggone good idea. What do you think, Kevin? Could we get away with that?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, it's rules were made to be followed. It doesn't matter if it's a regulation, a statute, or a rule that mom or dad set. So I think yep. We need to make sure people follow the rules. Know what they yep. are, but follow them as well.
Exactly. Exactly. Doug, thank you so much. That's some good input right there. We've got a
You're
farmer
welcome.
Forum going with Kevin Papp from Minnesota, Gary Niemeyer from Illinois. When we come back, we're going to keep the conversation going right here on AgriTalk.
Register now for your chance to win one of more than 1,000 prizes, including a full-size side-by-side utility vehicle. Go to FarmJournalFieldDays.com for full contest details.
I
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Davis, don't you think that there's some room for some more cowbell in this song someplace somewhere?
There might be some room for more cowbell in there somewhere. Somewhere. Yeah. I'll get right on that. I'll get on that.
No doubt.
Looks like my afternoon just planned itself.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. You're welcome, Davis.
Thank you.
Got Davis Michelson with me. We've got a Farmer Forum going.
David.
Kevin Papp and Gary Niemeyer today. Guys, we were coming up on a deadline for the CFAF program. Yesterday, they added crawfish to the list of eligible commodities being produced. Today, Iowa got liquid egg production added to the list of those that are eligible for some aid from CFAP. And here we sit, you guys. We pushed the deadline out to September 11th now. But, Kevin, I feel like they could keep pushing this back, and that I don't know why we're not seeing applications for this money faster than what we're seeing.
It is a little frustrating. You know, we're all in the storm together. We're not in the same boat. But I think one of the things, and just like you just mentioned, there's a lot of different parts of agriculture that aren't used to working with USDA. And it maybe takes a little more time, but really appreciate extending that deadline to let folks take a look at that and get in what they need to have in for records.
Yeah, Kevin, I think you're right on this one. Normally, I would say a deadline is a deadline, but on this one, and Chuck Connor, the CEO of the National Council of Farmers Cooperatives, was on the show yesterday, and he made a really interesting point. He said this isn't a farm bill program. It's an aid program to give producers products that we all enjoy, the ability to continue to produce it when this crisis, which hopefully, Gary, is a once-in-a-generation crisis, once it's over, that they can get back to producing it. So I don't know. I feel a little better about extending the deadline after hearing that.
Well, CFAP is an aid package. Our regular farm program payments, they're two different things. Mm-hmm. And the extension is not really the question. It's more about having the program so restrictive. And Chip, do you ever remember a farm program that they allotted a certain amount of money, but they could only get half of it out? And to follow up with that, let's be honest, these payments don't even begin to cover the losses for agriculture, whether it's grain, livestock, or produce. My best guess is they don't even cover losses for this additional item. Thus, give these farmers extra time to apply for much needed aid, because there are a lot of them that have never been through a program payment like we've had in corn and soybeans and wheat.
All right, I'm convinced now. I'm convinced. You guys got me here. Good decision to extend it. Kevin, boy, the election that took place in the state yesterday up in Minnesota, we've got former Minnesota State Senator and Lieutenant Governor Michelle Fischbach ready to run against Colin Peterson up there. That could be a tight race.
It is going to be an interesting race. You know, certainly Mr. Peterson, Chairman Peterson, has been a champion for agriculture. He's got those relationships with the other chairs, with the speaker, and all leadership. That's important. But it's a district where, Trump won by over 30% last
year.
So it's something that we're going to certainly look at and work with and make sure agriculture is at the table in those discussions.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary, boy, it's going to be a close fight there in that 7th District of Minnesota. I've been covering the farm bills and the House Ag Committee and House Ag Policy for so long, I can't hardly even imagine it covering it without Peterson in there.
Well, I got to be honest with you. When I was president, I spent a lot of time in the congressman's office, and I was very well pleased. He had a great staff. They were extremely helpful. And I don't know this other person. I'm really not from Minnesota, but I will say that the Congressman Peterson really worked for us very diligently on passing the Farm Bill.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk China here, because there was a U.S.-China Business Council's annual survey that was just released not too long ago. 7% of the companies who responded to the survey believe the gains from President Trump's Phase 1 deal with China outweigh the pain caused by the tariffs the president imposed. Just 7%, Gary.
Well, I tell you, this is a hard one because, really, if you get right down to it, China normally buys grain from the United States during August to February, or mm-hmm. our harvest season, and then they buy grain from South America during their harvest season, which makes a lot of sense, usually right. the lowest price. You know, there's so many issues over there. I tell you what, I wouldn't want to be anybody in their leadership either, because you know, China's got a flooding issue, and what would be the impact on corn and soybeans, and what would be a potential if that Three Gorges Dam breaks, and what would it mean yeah. to demand for U.S. grains? And then you got the fall army worm impact on China and crop production, plus desert locust in northern India. And really and truly, what is China's true import intentions? And throughout history, during food shortages, Chinese dynasties have changed dramatically. So there is a ton of issues going on in China currently, and they will make a, you know, I'm still hopeful that there could be a Russian wheat deal come out of this with all the disasters that's going on worldwide. So you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, it sounds like U.S. Trade Rep Lighthizer and Chief Negotiator out of China, Hugh Lee, will be having a conversation this weekend. What do you want the message from Lighthizer to be?
Well, I think I want the message to be that we want to be at the table. We want to be a customer for other countries, but we want to be a reliable supplier. So trade is so critically important to our success in agriculture. We've got to have trade.
Absolutely, we do. You guys were fantastic today. Thank you so much, Gary.
Chip enjoyed it.
All right, Kevin, good job, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
All right, have a great day. Stay safe.
You bet. That's Gary Niemeyer from Illinois and Kevin Papp from Minnesota on the Farmer Forum, sponsored by the Ag Conservation Movement. Appreciate all the time that they spent with us here this morning. Thank you for listening. You got to come back this afternoon. We're going to have the report details with some analysis from Seth Meyer, University of Missouri FAPRI. And tomorrow morning, RFA's Robert White, Fueling Good from Sturgis.